We're holding on Chof Omer Aleph at the top. We learned in the previous Mishnah about Stam the Dorim Mahachmu, that if a person says a neder and it's unspecified, that he could mean something which makes it also, which makes the object aser, or something else that makes it mutter, then we said we go lahachmir. But we said upirusha mahako, but if he explains himself, then we can go lakula. And we gave examples in the previous Mishnah where you have, for example, the word cherem, let's say, assuming that it means cherem, something off limits, but it can mean something off limits as far as something given to hektish, meaning something given to hektish, which is a dover hanodur and is a valid basis for neder, or it can mean cherem koyanim, which are not, because as soon as you give it to the koyan, then they lose their kedusha. So now our Mishnah is going to continue with the case where he explains in a different way, where he says the word cherem doesn't even mean something that's off limits in the first place. So the Mishnah says, neder b'cherem, suppose a person made a neder using cherem, meaning as usual, he says, this object should be cherem to me. Va'omar, and then he explains himself and he says, lo nadarti ela b'cherem shel yam. When I use the word cherem, I didn't mean cherem as an off limit. I meant cherem as, the word cherem can also mean a net. You have psukim that use the word cherem to the pasuk in Habakkuk, for example. Yasfeo bechermoi means a kind of net. So he's saying that I made the neder almost, that he's saying basically that he made the neder as a joke. Now you think of it, why would a person do that? So one idea is, now we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, that you might sometimes have a person might make a neder in front of other people in order for them to believe what he's saying. You know, in modern English, you have the same kind of thing. You know, a person is talking to people about something, and I swear to God that such and such, you know, and he means that people should believe him because he's saying it so strongly. So you have the same kind of thing in those days. So you could have, for example, and we'll have examples of it at the beginning of the next parak, that a person is making a neder in order to support, in order to buttress what he's saying, but he doesn't really want to make the neder. So therefore, he might use this kind of trick. He might say, if you don't believe me, then this fruit should be cherem to me. And meanwhile, he explains himself later, I didn't actually mean cherem as an off limits. I meant cherem, it should be like a net to me, which of course is not osir. Another example, bekarban. What if he said this food should be like a karban to me, where we've learned before that is a valid neder. But now he explains, lo nadarti ala bekarbanis shel malachim. When I said the word karban, I didn't mean a karban as in the kind that's brought to the Beis Hamikdash. I meant the kind that's brought as a gift when you come to see a king, which is not a davar hanadar. Or a third example, harei atzmi karban. Suppose he says atzmi, which usually would mean I myself am a korban. So the same thing. In other words, if you don't believe me, then atzmi, then I myself will be a korban to you, meaning that I will be off limits for you to have hana. But later on, he explains, but Omar, he says, lo nadarti ela be'etzem shehinachti li. The word atzmi, after all, literally means my bone. So it means, he says, I have a bone that I have in a drawer in my house, lias noderboy, that I use that to use for a neder. So now, again, when he says, harei atzmi korban, or harei, he doesn't actually mean that he himself should be a korban, meaning that he should be off limits and also bahana to the other guy. What he means is that he's saying that bone that I had set aside should be korban, which is of course he didn't mean. So therefore, in other words, in all these cases, he's using the neder in order to trick people or to make a joke or whatever. So all of those. No, insane is going to be that a person is not chayiv in mitzvahs at all. No. No, because in other words, remember the word atzmi, because the point is, in other words, all these words that we're using in the Mishnah have a double meaning. The word cherem means not only off limits, but also a net. The word korban means not only something you offer to Hashem, but also something that you offer as tribute to a human king. The word atzmi means not only myself, it literally means my bone. And a fourth example, I don't know why there's two dots over here because it's a continuation. Koinam ishti nenesli. What if the guy says a koinam that my wife should not have hana for me, or rather a koinam on any hana that my wife would have for me? But Omar, and later on he explains, you know what I meant by my wife? I meant my ex-wife, my first wife, whom I divorced. So I'll call on it. So now, are these a valid neder? So on the face of it, on the face of it, not. Because the fact is, since we're saying o perushim lahakol, then these are all examples of perushim lahakol. One, the same way as we said in the previous Mishnah, that if we were to say cherem, and he explains afterwards that he means cherem koyanim, then it would be mutter. By the same logic, if by cherem he meant not cherem at all, but rather a net, certainly it should be mutter. And in fact, the Ram says that's the chiddush of our Mishnah, even though these seem like more far-fetched things. It's one thing to say that cherem means something actually off-limits, but then to explain that I meant cherem koyanim rather than cherem gavoya. But to go so far and to say that cherem means something entirely different, something completely out of left field, a net, should we believe him? So the Mishnah is telling us we do believe him, but nevertheless, I'll call an einish olin lahem. All such things, so we don't need to be matir neder. We don't need to be matir neder for such things. The im nishal, we don't know what nishal literally means to ask. So a person who made such a neder doesn't need to ask a chacham to be matir neder because there's no neder here in the first place. But the Mishnah continues, v'im nishalu, if they did ask a chacham, now we're going to see in the Gemara again about the difference between a tamid chacham and an ama oretz that we talked about at the beginning of the perek. So if they do ask in Beis Din, oinshin oisan, then Beis Din will penalize them, or machmir in alehen, and be machmir on them, and say that we do consider it a valid neder. So the Gemara, yeah, shayla machtrei, yeah, that's a good example. So the Gemara is going to explain, we're talking about a tamid chacham versus an ama oretz. A tamid chacham, we can believe him on that. An ama oretz, we can't necessarily. An ama oretz, we can't necessarily believe him that is what he meant. Or another point is, ama oretz are more careless with nedarim in the first place, and therefore we don't want to make it too easy for them to do this kind of thing, because then they're just going to do it in the future. Divrei Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir says. V'cham, I remember the Chum say we're not just machmer on them. Poiskam and Pesach, we are machmer on them, but in a different sense. Where we don't necessarily punish them or whatever, but we have to find them a Pesach on other grounds. Now, later in the Perek, we're going to talk about later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about a little bit on Daf Chof Beis, actually, so we're going to get to it soon, that there are two basic ways, there's two basic ways of being Matir Neder. They're called Pesach and Charota. Charota is just where the person says, I regret that I ever made this Neder. Without even getting into because of the consequences or whatever, I don't know what I was thinking when I made that neder. Later on Daf Chof Beis, we're going to have examples where people might, where the chacham might use such expressions to him and say, were you really in your right mind when you made that neder, essentially? That's called charata. Pesach is more the person is saying, I made the neder, I had all the good intentions in mind, but I didn't realize that it has this and this and this side effect. So that would be, that's a Pesach. So, and we're going to have examples of it later. So one example we're going to have later on, for example, is the person made a neder, let's say, that he's going to divorce his wife. So now, so he may still be angry at her, but the Chacham points out to him, do you realize, for example, that that's going to have a bad effect on your kids? People are going to say, you know what, why did he divorce this woman? Must be she was Mizana. Who knows what's going on with his kids? They might be Mamzerim or something. And he might say to himself, you know what, I never thought of that. I never thought of that consequence. Which is, by the way, why? So you have in Pirkei Avos, you have a line that Al Tishaloi B'Shas Nidrei, when a person is making a neder, don't ask them about it. Why not? Because imagine the person is making such a neder. Imagine, for example, he's making a neder to divorce his wife. And then you being there, you well-meaning, say to him, yeah, but do you realize that's going to have such and such and such consequences? And he says, I don't care. I'm making the neder anyway. I'm so mad at her. Now, later on, when he wants to be matir neder, you've destroyed his Pesach. Because the Rav is going to ask him, did you realize that? Yeah, I realized that. And I went ahead with it anyway. So therefore, that's why, yeah. Anyway, so the Chachamim here in the Mishnah are saying like this. First of all, they're saying, this is how the Ran explains it. First of all, you can't use charota as the basis for canceling his neder. The Gemara is going to explain that. You can't use charota. You're going to have to use Pesach. So you can't just ask him, were you really in your right mind when you made this neder? So here, again, we're talking about in the Mishnah. He said, noder b'cherem, for example. So and later on, he's explaining that he meant a cherem as in a net. So now, the Chachamim are saying, at least in the case of an Amoretz, that we don't ask him when he wants, when we so we certainly don't tell him that's not a neder because you say, because you explained it to me in a net. Instead, he being an amaoretz, we want to be machmer on him because otherwise he's going to be careless with nedarim and he's not going to realize such distinctions and whatever. But we don't ask him, do you have charota? Rather, we say, can we find a pesach? Can we find other grounds to be matter your neder? So let's say, for example, so he said, Nodar b'cheirim, he said, for example, this food should be also to me as cheirim. So now, we don't tell him it's not a neder because cheirim means a net. We don't tell him, do you regret making that neder? Rather, we try to find other grounds. We ask him about side effects. Do you realize by making this and this food also to you that let's say when it comes your birthday, your wife's going to want to get you that fruit and you're not going to be able to eat it and so forth, whatever. So you have to do like that, say the Chachamim. Umulamdin oisan, and we teach them not to make nedarim like that in the first place. Kadeshala, you know, go kalos roish for nedarim so that they're not careless with nedarim. Which the Ran explains, when we have, now earlier in the parak, when we said, for example, when we gave the various examples from the beginning of the parak of things that are not in fact nedarim, for example, we said the person said kibosa moliach. He said this food should be to me like salted meat, where we said one possibility is, we learned in the previous Mishnah, that could mean like meat that was offered to Avodah Zarah. And if he explains that that's what it means, then that's fine. That's not a neder. The fact is they would salt meat that they offered to Avodah Zarah as well. No, that's the point. Therefore, it's not a neder. So that kind of thing, the Ran explains, we're not going to have to, even by an Amoretz, we're not going to require Sheva for that. So he's not going to have to ask a Rav, because once he explained that, now to say that Bosa Maliach means Korbonus of Avodah Zarah is a reasonable explanation. It's not the kind of thing that people are going to do as a joke. It's rather we can say that he sincerely thought that that's a neder, and now we explain to him that not. And other examples like that. Similarly, Cherem, if he says Cherem Koyanim. On the other hand, here, where he says cherem, and he explains that he means something completely out of left field, a net, that is where the Mishnah is saying over here that according to the mayor and according to the Chachamim, we do need to be machmer on him because we don't want him to joke around with Nadarim. Okay.
Both of them have the same reason.
So ultimately, they both have the idea, conditionally, you know, Kalug versus Benadarim, right? So the mayor says, because in order to accomplish that, we punish them and we're machmer on them, as we're going to see in the Gemara, whereas the Chachamim say we're machmer on them in that we don't allow them to use Harota. They have to use Pesach, and the Pesach has to be on different grounds, not just to say that you have a valid Pesach because this wasn't a neder in the first place, right? So the Gemara asks, Hogo for Kasha. Now, in the Mishnah, you seem to have a contradiction. We're saying Amrit Ein Nishalom Lahen. First, you're saying that you don't have to ask about them at all because they're mutter, because he explains that he meant something which is mutter. So the same way as in the previous Mishnah when he said Cherem and he explains Cherem Koyanim, that it's mutter. The same way over here he explains that Cherem means a net, it's also mutter. But then the Mishnah is saying that Rameyer is saying that you punish him, you penalize him, and you machmer on him. So what is it? Does he need to be matter neder or not? The answer is Amar Yehuda Hachi Katani. The Kulan Ain Srichen Sheila. All of these cases, you don't need to. They are mutter without Sheila. They are mutter without asking the Rav. Bamed Varam Amur B'Tamid Chacham. When would that apply? By a Tamid Chacham. Abel Ba'ama Oretz Shabali Shoyl. But an Ama Oretz who comes to ask about this, Oin Shinoisa. Then we penalize him. Or Machmir and Olav. And then we're Machmir on him. So because of Tamid Chacham, we, first of all, Tamid Chacham will understand the distinction between a valid neder and not. And second of all, because in general, Tamid Chachamim are not so porutz v'nedarim. Common people were very careless with nedarim, like we were saying before, the same way as nowadays, we have many people in the heat of the moment, in the heat of an argument, I swear to God, such and such. Whereas, you know, people who know a little bit of Torah and understand the severity of it are not going to talk like that. In the same way, the Amei Oretz in those times would be very, very likely to use expressions of nedarim to buttress what they're saying or whatever. We're going to learn in the next parak, let's say, you're going to have, you know, people are bargaining over an object, and one of them says, I won't sell it for less than a seller, and if I do, then such and such should be also to me. And the other one says, I won't buy it for less than a half a seller, and for more than a half a seller, and if I do, then the such and such should be also to me. Actually, we're going to learn in the next paragraph that such things are mutter, but the point is that Amei Ha'aretz were free and careless with these kinds of things. So now, when he says that he used the word cherem, and now he wants to explain that he meant a cherem as in a net, we're going to be machmer on him being an Amei Ha'aretz, that we don't want him to get careless with nedarim like that. So that's the difference, a Talmud Chacham versus an Amei Ha'aretz. Again, the Ran says it's one thing, the other ones before that we said, for example, if he says that cherem does mean cherem, but it means cherem koyanim, then we can be meiko on him, even an Amei Ha'aretz, because the fact that he understands that distinction shows that he's not that free and careless with the nedarim. But here where he's saying like he's going to make it as a joke, then yeah. Okay. So if the Talmud Chacham, for example, at one point said, I make a neder with a cherem, and later on he explains that he means cherem as in a net, then... So that's the thing. So we would say, ein nishol, and he doesn't even need to ask. He being a Talmud Chacham, he knows to begin with that such a thing is a valid neder, so therefore the object is not also to him. So the Gemara says, now I understand what we mean by we're machmir on the amor. It means the loy paschin and leba charota is that we don't begin for him with charota. We don't ask him, were you thinking straight when you made this neder? Kedu liba chaloch, I was going to call it later on, daf chabez. So we don't do that. Rather, we have to find a separate pesach for him. In fact, Tosfos explains over here the Chachamim had used the expression Pesach mimakom acher. Does Reb Meir agree to that, or does Reb Meir say we need to find a Pesach, but it can even be from that place itself? That we explained to him that Machmir and all that would be, we explained to him that the Pesach within the neder itself, that when you said Cherem and you say you mean a net, then that itself is a Pesach to be matter the nether. So does Reb Meir allow that, or does he agree with the Chachamim and say that you need to find a Pesach mimakom acher? Different grounds. Anyway, so Ella Oinshin Hechidami, what do we mean exactly by Oinshin, and what way do we penalize him? So the answer is Kedetanya, as we learn in a Braisa, not as far as regular Nedarim, but as far as Nezirus. Mishin, which after all, Nezirus is a type of Nedar. Mishin, and you have the same kind of thing, the same way as we were saying that you often would have, that people would say, you have to believe me, and if you don't believe me, then I'm making a neder of such and such. The same way you often have, as we've been talking about before, people would do the same kind of thing with Nezirus. Like we talked about yesterday, for example, I bet that's Levi coming towards us, and if that's not Levi, I'll be a Nazir. So now...
But the guy knows that it's going to cost him 30 days.
It's going to cost him 30 days, but still, yeah, he's still in the heat of the moment. People don't always think straight. So that would be, we would say, so now, again, if he makes such a neder, let's do a more complicated case where he's saying, for example, this food should be cherem to me, and if I eat it, then I will be a nazir for 30 days. Now, later on, he's explaining that by cherem, he really meant a net, and therefore it's not a valid neder at all. So nevertheless, we're saying oinshin oisai, that we still penalize him. So in what way do we penalize him? So kedetanya, mishin nazir, if a person made a neder of nazirus, va'over al nazirusai, and then he was over on it, so he was eating grapes or becoming tamei or what have, not becoming tamei, he has to start over as nazirus, but anyway, eating grapes or cutting his hair or whatever, in this kokin way, Beis Din will not even deal with him to be matir neder, until he's noyig the isturim of nazirus, the equivalent number of days that he was doing as heter. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. But Amar Rabbi Yosi, b'med gorim amurim, when would that apply? B'nazirus mu'etus, only if it was a short nazirus. So therefore, for example, a nazirus of only 30 days. So then, let's say, for example, so he made nazirus of 30 days, and then he ended up thinking, you know what, the whole thing was a joke anyway. I meant cherem in the sense of a net. So he goes and he continues eating grapes and drinking wine and so on and so forth. 10 days later, he finally thinks to himself, you know, I really should ask a Rav about this. And he goes to ask a Rav to be matir neder. So the Rav will tell him, you have 20 days left of your nazirus, but now you need an additional 10 days to make up for the 10 days that you weren't keeping. And then only after that, can we be matir your neder. So that way he doesn't get away with it, basically. So that's what Rabbi Yossi says. Abba ben nazirus meruba, but if it was a longer nazirus, daya lamed yom, then it's enough 30 days. So let's say it was a nezirus of 100 days. So let's say after 50 days, he comes to the Rav to ask. So you could have nezirus as long as you want. We learned yesterday, a person could be a nezirin for his whole life. The minimum is 30 days. The maximum, there's no maximum. So a person could say, I'm a nezir for the next 100 days. Again, using this method of cherem, where he meant the whole thing as a joke. We talked about if a person makes multiple nizarim of nizirus. If he says harini nazar hayoim, harini nazar hayoim, then each one of them is a term of 30 days. But a person can specify to begin with when he makes a neder of nizirus, he can say to begin with, I will be a nazar for X number of days. As long as it's more than 30, that as long as it's 30 or more, then it works. He could also, you could have all kinds of other things. A person could say, for example, I'll be a nazar from now until Hanukkah. And he's a nazar until Hanukkah, however many days that is. Yeah. Anyway.
Is it just less than 30?
No, if it's less than 30, it won't work. But it will work, but it means, in other words, he's a nazir beyond that until 30 days are over. But now, let's say our ama'aretz over here. He made a neder of nazirus, let's say, that I will be a nazir for the next 100 days. Again, involving cherem or korban or whatever the examples in our Mishnah where he meant as a joke. So now he figures, okay, well, then there's no nazirus. And he goes and then continues his life as normal. 50 days pass, and finally he comes to a chacham, and the chacham tells him, you know what, we have to treat this as a valid neder, even though you're claiming that it meant a net. So now, according to Rabbi Yossi, the chacham is not going to make him keep an extra 50 days to make up for the 50 days that he violated, because the fact is he still has more than 30 days to go until his nezirus is over anyway, so therefore we'll tell him the fact that you have to keep those remaining 50 days, or 30 days, or whatever it is, as nezirus, that's good enough. You'll be yotze, given that there wasn't really a neder here in the first place, then you'll keep that and you'll be yotze that way.
As long as
there's 30 days left, that's the point. That's what Rabbi Yossi is saying. So Avol Nezirus Merubah, when it's a long Nezirus, Daya Lamed Yom, then 30 days is quite enough. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef, Hoyova Amri Rabbanan Ein Niskakin Moi. Now we said that the oinshinoi ein niskokin loy, Beis Din is not going to get involved with him to be matir his neder until, as we said, he keeps the appropriate number of days. It doesn't just mean, the Ran explains, doesn't just mean that we're not gonna call him in and ask him to be matir neder. Now, usually, we're going to learn in the next perek, the Ran points out, that usually when a person has made a neder, Beis Din has a responsibility to call him in and try to be matir the neder, even before he fulfills it. Because we're going to learn in the next perek that making a neder is not really such a good thing to begin with. We touched on it earlier in the Masech, actually. And therefore, Beis Din should make an effort to call the guy in and try to have him be matir neder. So now, not only does it not mean that in this case, we don't do it. Again, we have this guy who made a neder of nezirus using one of these joke methods in the Mishnah. Now we're saying that he violated it for part of the time. And we're saying in niskokim loy means we don't even get involved with him until he keeps a number of days equal to the number of days that he violated, according to Rabbi Yehuda always, and according to Rabbi Yossi only if there's 30 days left. So in niskokim loy does not only mean that we don't call him in, it means that even if he himself comes in, since they were saying in the Braisa that we don't get involved with him, that means Beit Dinah de Mizdachki. So if a Beis Din does get involved, whether they call him in or even if he himself comes and they say, okay, we'll be Mata Yuneder, Loy Ovid Shaper, such a Beis Din is not acting properly. They would do well to tell him, like we just said, wait, you already violated 10 days of your Nezirus. You're going to need an extra 10 days of it before we can even listen to you to be Mata Yuneder for you. And Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, we put them in cherem. Such a Beis Din, in other words, that would be matir neder. Keep in mind that a Beis Din doesn't have to be tamid chachamim per se. It can be three head yotis, can also be matir. So if they are going on matir neder for such a person before he kept the extra days, then we would put them in cherem because they acted wrong. Because they acted wrongly, because they should know not to be matir neder until he's more careful with his neder. So Beis Din has to have, yeah, they have to have their finger on the pulse of the community and know what's going on. Sure, yeah. So, does the person need aid him? Not necessarily. If he himself comes to Beis Din and says, I made such and such a neder, then yeah. Okay. So that was all I wanted to mayor. Tosfos, by the way, discusses the question, is the halacha, in fact, like a mayor in all of this, what the Mishnah is saying, that unshin oisen, that we penalize them, like we said, or maybe the halacha is like a chachamim in our Mishnah, that we don't penalize them, we just malamdin oisen. The Rambam paskins like what we just said over here about this Nazirus Meruba and Nazirus Muetis business, that we do require him to keep that number of days of Nazirus. Then we said in the Mishnah, the Ran in fact says that the halacha is like the chacham. It is true. He says we do still follow what we just said about Rabbi Yossi versus Rabbi Yehuda. We do still require him to keep the number of days of Isser. But we don't say like a mayor, we don't punish them, we don't penalize them, and we can't even use charota as a basis for being matter the neder when the chum say. So the Ran learns that when we say post chaman pesach mimakam acher, doesn't necessarily mean that we need a pesach as opposed to charota. The chum was saying, in fact, you can use charota, you just have to teach them in the future not to do like this. So the Ran says that would be the halacha. But we do at least have to tell them that it's usur, and not just tell them, you know what, this is not a neder in the first place. And if someone tells them this is not a neder in the first place, then yes, we would put such a person in cheirem because then he's causing amei oretz to be careless with nedarim. The Ran, by the way, mentions a story in that regard. He brings from Tosfos Chachmei at Sarfatim, from the Tosfos of the Chachamim of France. He says there was a person who made a neder that he's not going to eat any produce in the world except for grain. Then he was over on his neder. He came to a rav, and the rav right away was matir neder. What happened to the isur kiyamim shenag ben heter? So the rav argues that of course it was a valid neder daraisa, and was saying he should have done the isur the number of days, but you're going to end up being machshelim. He's not going to be able to hold up to that. To not eat anything, any produce of the ground except for grain, and he's going to get weak. He's not going to be able to do malachas shemayim. So the rav was matir neder right away, and that was a valid thing to do. But he was machmer that he required him to find a pesach rather than a charot. So there you have an example that the Ran is saying where you have somebody actually was matir such a neder right away without requiring him to do yomim shenag ben iser, the number of yomim shenag ben heter, to make up for the days that he was careless with the neder, but that was a special case. Okay, the Gemara continues. V'chamim poischem pesach. We said the Chachamim say we find him a pesach from another place. We find him a different grounds for a pesach. Or according to the Ran, even charota would work for that purpose. But we teach them not to be careless with nedarim. So now let's have some agada on that subject of being careless with nedarim. Tana, we learn in a brisa. La'olam al tehi rogel b'nedarim. Don't get used to making nedarim. Shesayv chalimel b'shvuos. Because then you're going to end up. Then you're going to end up transgressing shvuos, and shvuos are much more serious. We learned the other day a shvuah, it says lo yinakeh, that Hashem will not completely cleanse somebody who swears a shvuos shav as opposed to a neder. So if you make nedarim all the time, eventually you're going to come to make shvuos, and then you're going to be over on one of them, and then you're going to be in, then you're going to be in big trouble. A different girsa has been nedarim, shasev kalimim and nedarim. Eventually, you're going to end up violating one of your nedarim. So don't do that. And by the way, here's some other pieces of advice. Don't visit and then stay by an Ama Oretz regularly. Because eventually the Ama Oretz is going to end up giving you food, which is tevel. The Ama Oretz, after all, is a certain number of Ama Oretz were not careful with Meiser. Truma, yes, but Meiser, no. So therefore, you're going to end up eating something which you're not allowed to eat.
Truma goes to the
Kohen, and Maaser Rishon goes to the Levi, and Maaser Sheni is brought to Yerushalayim. So the Amei Oretz were all careful with Truma, but they weren't careful with the rest of them, which includes also Trumas Maaser. Trumas Maaser also goes to the Kohen, but the Amei Oretz weren't careful with that, which is why you have the whole Masechta Demai on these subjects. So if you're regularly visiting by and eating by an Amei Oretz, sooner or later you're going to end up eating Tevel accidentally. And a third one, alti rogel, it's a koyin ama oretz. Don't regularly visit a koyin who's an ama oretz. Shasoyv chalachil chatruma, because in the end he's gonna give you truma to eat, and you are a zar, and you're not allowed to eat truma. Or a different girsa, we're on the side of here, and the Ran says also is the word is truma tmeya, meaning even if you are a Kohen, so there's no problem with you eating his Truma, but sooner or later he's going to end up on Am HaOretz, after all, if not careful on the din of Truma Batara, so he's going to end up giving you Truma, which is Tameh, and a Kohen is not allowed to eat Truma Tameh. And the Braisa gives another piece of advice, which we have in Pirkei Avos also, don't talk too much with women, because eventually that's going to lead you to Znus. A neof, actually, adultery. So you get too familiar with women, then you have that. There's an explanation, by the way, that why Altaira Sikhaim Ha Isha, why the hey means even if she's a woman who's a great tzaddikus and a tsnua and whatever, still you have to hold back. So now that leads the Gemara into a long discussion about dinim involving tsnius. Rab Acha by Rab Yoshia Omer, if a person gazes at women, eventually he's going to come to Aveira, which Aveira in the Gemara, unspecified, usually means Znus, usually means Arayas. Because it's one thing if he's, the Sofa means to gaze at them, like to look at them at length. So eventually that leads a person, it breaks down his self-control. Then Yehoyada actually points out, he says an interesting thing, that sofa might mean not only he's just looking at women themselves, but even he's looking at pictures of them. Eventually it can cause this kind of thing. And he continues, also, if a man looks at the okev, now literally okev means the heel, so we'll see in a second what it means. If he looks at the heel of a woman, he's going to have children who are not erev, because the thoughts that he have is going to affect when he's with his wife, and it's going to have a bad influence on his children. So Rabbi Yosef says that means when his wife, when she's a nidda, meaning the Ran says it means even his own wife, but when she's a nidda, so even though soon she's going to be mutter to him, but to look at her okev, as we'll see in a second, what okev means is still inappropriate and it'll have a bad effect on his children. So what do we mean by okev? The word akeva that the Braisa used over here, that Rav Acha, Rav Yoshi said, actually means the mokem atinoifus, which means the unclean place. Yeah. So on the face of it, it means oise mokem. It means her private parts, her area, yeah. So why are we calling it okev? Shomuchoven, kenegida okev. Because on the body, it's exactly opposite the heel. You have the heel is on the bottom of it, and on the back of the foot, and it's directly underneath that area of the body. In fact, you have halachas of that in Hilchos Nida. A woman finds blood on her heel. It might have dripped from her uterus, and therefore she's tummy misafik. So we see there's a certain direct connection.
What do you mean?
No, it depends what position she was standing in, right, or sitting in or whatever. But with that said, though, the Meiri has a different explanation over here. He says that when we say akeva de katani makamati noifas, he can mean her backside. He doesn't mean necessarily. So even he says, even she's wearing clothes, but he's looking at and staring at her backside, even when she's his own wife, but she's nida, is also, we're saying, is also no good. So to follow a woman behind her in the street is something else. There's other Gemaras that talk about it. Maybe you use the word Losh and Okev over there also, I don't remember, but yeah. Okay. So now, further in this connection, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says, Ba'avur tia yir ose al pnechem, right after Matan Torah, Hashem says that I showed myself to you on Har Sinai in order that Hashem's fear, actually Moshe is telling the Jewish people, in order that Hashem's fear should be on your face, zu busha. This word, Ba'avur tia yir ose al pnechem, refers to the sense of shame that a Yid should have. And the vilti sechato, the pasuk continues, in order that you shouldn't sin, that teaches us that a capability to be embarrassed leads a person to fear Aveira, because he doesn't want to do the Aveira, and then he's going to, whether he's afraid that people will catch him, whether on a higher level he's afraid that Hashem will catch him, whatever the case, the fact that he has a sense of shame will keep him away from Aveiras. Mikan omru, based on this, the Chachamim said, simin yofa ba'adam shu baishan. It's a good simon for a person when he has a sense of shame. Acherim, remember, Acherim, which usually means Reb Meir, says, "Kol adam misbayish loy b'meheru hu chote." If a person has a sense of embarrassment, then he won't quickly come to do averus, because again, he'll be embarrassed to do that. And a person who has no boshes ponim, who just says and does whatever he wants and is not embarrassed, be a duash loy umdu avoyis of a Har Sinai. You can be sure that his ancestors did not stand on Har Sinai, because we're saying the reason for Maimon Har Sinai was Ba'avurti Yir Ose Al Pneichem. So therefore, if a person doesn't have boshes ponim, then he's showing that he's not from the descendants of those Jews who stood at Har Sinai. It means that his ancestors were Gerim or maybe even Goyim, and he got to, you know, embedded into the Jewish people without anybody realizing. And yeah, Gerim, really, I mean, the neshamas of Gerim were by half Sinai as well. So yeah, we would have to mean, really, in other words, that he's that obviously it wouldn't be valid lahalacha. We wouldn't say in Beis Din that therefore he's necessarily not a Yid. But in other words, we should realize for ourselves that, there is, it's not a matter of halacha, right? It's a matter of more. Maybe if it didn't become a ger lahalacha, right? There is, by the way, there's a Gemara in Beitza that says, on the contrary, the Jewish people are the most azeponim, the most brazen-faced of nations. So the vote, and then it says over there, we were given the Torah in order to take away that mentality from us. So now we see in our Gemara that the result is that Hashem implanted a sense of busha into the Jewish people. That's what we say. The Jewish people are by shonim, rachmonim, and goim lachsadim. With that said, by the way, Ben Yehoyada says, "Lo yamdu avos of Har Sinai," maybe means that his previous Gilgal of his neshama was not there by Har Sinai, because and that's why now in his current Gilgal he has this lack of busha. Okay, so now more on this topic about busha and what you align with, and then now we're going to focus on what a husband and wife are allowed to do when they're alone together, when they're having relations. So the Gemara starts off, and the connection is, in other words, because when we say some of these things are improper because they show a lack of a sense of busha. Even when a couple is having relations, they have to have a certain sense of busha. So Amar Rabbi Yechon ben Dehavai, Dalad Dvarim Socholi Malachi Asharis. The Malachi Asharis, and we're going to see on Amud Beis that we don't mean actual Malachim, but they inform me, says Rabbi Yechon ben Dehavai, four things, for the reasons for four different kinds of birth defects. Now, we don't mean, obviously, that every time a child has one of these birth defects is because of one of these things, but at least that these are contributing factors. So, why is it that some children are born lame? The reason is because when the parents had relations, they turn over the table. Now, there are two different explanations what that means. One explanation, Rashi says, is that not Rashi, Mefarish, whatever, unprinted under Rashi's name, is that it means that they do that front to back, where she's on her hands and knees, and the husband is behind her. So it's still in Oisimakim, it's still Bia Kedarka, but it's not in the usual position. The other possibility is that it means Shaloi Kedarka, Bia Shaloi Kedarka in the other place.
Lay means what?
Lame. Lame means that they can't walk. Hinkadik, yeah. So why is that? So because hoif chemes shochanim. So again, either hoif chemes shochanim means that they do it in a different position. So the mafarder says he lamaila. So it can mean either. So that's the thing. So first he says it means ponim keneged oda, front to back, and they do shaloi kedarka. Or the other explanation is it is kedarka, but she's on top. Usually the husband is supposed to be on top. So then that's called, so either of those, one or the other of those, is called hoif chemes shochanim. And we're saying because of that, their children can be born lame. The Ran explains that because they did something different involving the yerech, involving the thigh, therefore their children end up being that they can't use their thighs properly. The Rosh says it somewhat differently, because he's bothering his wife to be in an uncomfortable position and having to support herself on her knees, therefore their children end up having trouble with their knees and with their legs. The second one, Ilmim b'nei mahavyan, why are some children born mute, unable to speak? It has not really genetic, but an inborn thing, a congenital thing, right? The Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya, and it talks about in many Sfarim before and after him, the idea about being Makadish Atzma B'Shas Tashmish, where the idea is, the Alter Rebbe develops the idea in Perek Beis of Tanya, the neshama itself, sometimes you can have the neshama itself has nothing to do with the parents. Sometimes you have a tremendously high neshama that can be brought down into the world by really lowly people. But in terms of the levushim of the neshama, that depends on what the couple does, B'Shas Tashmish. So here we're saying that if they do this Hoif Chemas Shulchanon, however you define that, then it has a bad influence on the development of their children. The second one, ilmim b'nei mahavyan, why are some children born mute, unable to speak? The reason is nishim nashkim al oisim makim, because they kiss each other on oisim makim, on their private parts. So they're using their mouth improperly, so therefore the children have problems with their mouth. The third one, chershim b'nei mahavyan, why are some children born deaf? The reason is nishim resaprim b'shas tashmish, because they talk while they're having tashmish. And therefore, so they're doing wrong with speaking and with hearing, and therefore the children are born with problems in that. So we're going to see on Amud Beis. One second. We're going to talk about what you're allowed and not allowed to do. First of all, the Gemara is going to point out soon that all of this is according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Dehavai. We're going to say on Amud Beis, the Chachamim disagree, but we'll get into a little bit what the actual dinim and minhagim and whatever are in this. And the fourth one, sumim nepnei mahavyon. Why are some children born blind? Because they stare at oisimakim, they stare at each other's private parts. Okay, so the Gemara says, on the third one about Masapur Mashas Tashmish, the Gemara says Uraminu. So you're telling me that you're not supposed to be talking during Tashmish, but Uraminu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. The Bryce says, Shalos Ima Shalom, they ask Ima Shalom, which was Rebbe Eliezer's wife. She was the sister of Rebbe Gamliel and the wife of Rebbe Eliezer. So they asked Ima, by the way, as a title of respect. It's like Rebbetzin nowadays, Shalom was her actual name. Anyway, they asked her, why are your children exceptionally beautiful? They have, in particular, the Rosh says, they have no mum. So she tells them, because let me explain what my husband does when we have relations. He doesn't talk with me, which means to have relations, at the beginning of the night or at the end of the night, for reasons that we're going to explain in a couple of lines. Only in the middle of the night. So the idea is, the Ran says, that at the beginning of the night, there are women walking around in the street, and he was concerned that he's going to be thinking about them when he's having tashmish with his wife. At the end of the night also, it's early in the morning, some people are out and about. The middle of the night, nobody's out and about, so it's less likely that he's going to be thinking of other people who are walking around out, like he hears people's footsteps outside. He's going to be thinking about them in the middle of the night. That's less likely to happen. And she continues, when he's talking with me and when he's having relations with me, Megala Tefach Machasa Tefach, he uncovers a tefach and covers a tefach. So in other words, the Ran explains like this. The Gemara in Brachas explains that when a person is going to the bathroom, there's only a certain amount of their body they should uncover. You have to uncover something, obviously, but you shouldn't do more than necessary. You should realize that you're being watched by Hashem, even in the bathroom. And therefore, this goes back to what we were saying before about having a sense of busha. And therefore, there's only a certain minimum amount that you should uncover. So now we're saying, in other words, of the two tefachim that you're allowed to uncover for that, Rebbe Eliezer would uncover only one tefach and keep the second tefach covered. That's how the Ran explains. Rashi explains that he would uncover gradually, like he'd uncover a tefach and then cover it again with a begin and keep on repeating until after they do bia. He looked like when he was having relations as if a shed had forced him. Like, in other words, the Ran says he was in a rush to do it as if he's being harassed and forced by a shed. Because in other words, he was doing it just purely for the sake of the mitzvah and not for any kind of physical hanah. So now she's saying the result of that is that we have exceptionally beautiful children. The point is, in other words, that the Rosh brings another point as well, that now we learned back in Ksubas, we said that there is supposed to be kiruv basar, there is supposed to be physical contact between the husband and the wife. But we're saying the Rosh is explaining that he didn't really want to have that hanah any more than necessary. So therefore, he would keep as much as necessary covered. These various things are brought in Shulchan Aruch, some of them as halachas, some of them as midas chasidus. That particular one, it says, don't necessarily do unless they both agree, because we actually learned from Ksubas, it's not such a good thing. The Parisium do like that, we're not supposed to do like that. One thing, though, it does say, based on this Gemara about being covered, is they should cover themselves with a blanket over both of them. They should have kiruv basar, they should have full physical contact, but they should be covered milamayla with a blanket. Yeah. Anyway, va'amauti loy matam. So Ima Shalom says, I asked Rabbi Eliezer, why are you doing all that? Va'amali, and he says, k'desh lo etenes enai b'isha acheres, because I don't want that while we're having relations, I'm going to be thinking about some other woman, v'nimtzu bona boim l'dei mamzerus, and then it comes out that children are considered, in a certain sense, mamzerim. Not literally, obviously, it's him and her, but nevertheless, v'ruchnius, there's a certain taint of mamzerus involved. Means I'm going to it's in the same, I literally need to put my eyes, right, but it means to think about. He's going to, in his mind's eye, he's going to be thinking about some other woman. That was why he would do it specifically in the middle of the night. The point is, though, that she used the expression mesaper im, implying that even Rebbe Eliezer, with all the kedusha and tara and everything that was saying that he put into it, he would still actually talk with her. So what do you mean there's a problem talking, that we said because of that the children end up being mute? The answer is, loikasha, habamili detashmish, habamili achranaisa. it depends whether we're talking about things involving Tashmish, to talk with her about that in order to put her in a good mood for Tashmish, that you can do. But other things are inappropriate at that time, because then that can cause him to start thinking about other women. So that's one. When Rabbi Yochanan and then Davai says, but they should have sapped the Shas Tashmish, he doesn't mean that they talk. He means that they talk about things that are unrelated to Tashmish. But the Rosh also points out when he's talking about it also helps to increase his taiva when he talks about matters of Tashmish. So therefore, such things are fine. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. That's the point. We shouldn't be talking about anything else, right? Yeah, but if they do that. Yeah, but they're not doing Tashmish. There is, by the way, it's not so simple, actually. There is, but aside from everything we're saying in the Gemara over here, there are things up in Zohar, and some of those are brought in Shulchan Aruch and the Noisa Kalim as things that a person should be careful with. One interesting idea that it says over there is the actual act of Tashmish, the actual Bia, is the Zohar compares it to the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, the Kohen Gadol, when he went in there, he didn't say anything. Only when he's outside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the entire avodah he does in the Kodesh HaKadoshim is in silence. Only when he goes out does he daven tefillah chatzara. So therefore, based on that analogy, there was the idea that maybe also when we're saying over here, mili to tashmish versus mili achronaisa can also mean before and after versus during. During the actual tashmish, according to that, and again, this is to a certain extent, these things are midas chassidus. We're not, the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, not necessarily are all these things required al pi halacha. Nowadays very few people are on that level. Yeah, but the point is, in principle, the idea is, at least according to that Zoya, the actual Tashmish itself should be done silently, and only before and after it they can be Masaper. But even then, we're saying over here, be careful what you're Masaper on. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Zu Divrei Yochanan ben Dahavai. All of that is what Yochanan ben Dahavai says, and very nice, we have to respect what he says, but you should know, Av Ella. But the Chachamim say, Aval Amr Chachamim Ein Halacha Ki Yechanan Ben Dehavai. The Chachamim disagree. They say the Halacha is not like him. You don't have to worry about these things. Ela Kol Ma She'Adam Roitz Alasis Be'Ishtoi Oseh. Whatever a husband wants to do with his wife in bed, they can do. Now, there are Mefarshim, in particular the Ravid, holds that the only one they're disagreeing with is about the Hoifchimas Shulchanam. About they can do different positions, but the other ones about staring at Oseh Makom or kissing it or whatever, those even the Chachamim would agree with Yochanan ben Dehavai that you shouldn't be doing that. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to not make that distinction. He just says generically that Kol Masha Adam Roitz Alasis V'Ishtoi Oseh. There is a big question, by the way, when we talked about before, one possibility of Hoichem as Shulchanam can mean Shaloi Kedauka. There is a lot of discussion about whether that is in fact Mutter. There's a Tosfos and Yevamos that bears on this, and there's various other things. There is one thing that Tosfos mentions over there, that first of all, it may only be allowed only if he's not Motzi Zera L'Batala, and second of all, so in other words, you'd have to actually eventually put it in the right place in order to be Motzi Zera in the proper place. But besides that, also, it may only be allowed only on very rare occasions, and I think though on the Foshim, we understand Tosfos to mean over there, like maybe only once in his entire lifetime, he wants to try it out, but not to do. And of course, you know, there's also the question of whether she agrees to it. So it gets complicated. Anyway, but these are the kind of things that you discuss privately with your chassid teacher or with your mashpia or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so the chum say Ella kol masha adam roitz alasas beishtoi oseh. Whatever a husband wants to do with his wife is fine. Moshal abosar abomim beis hatabach. It's like a piece of meat that you bring home from the butchers. Rotzel oichle b'melach oichle. If you just want to salt it and eat it as like beef jerky, then you can do that. Soli oichle. If you want to roast it, you can eat that. Mavushal oichle. If you want to eat it cooked, then good. Sholok oichle. If you want to eat it stewed, which is overcooked like, then you can eat it. So the same way, b'chein dog abomim beis hatzayah. The same way when you buy a fish from the trapper, same thing. You can prepare it many different ways. So the same way they're saying, in other words, a husband has the right to do many different things. So again, are we talking about all the things that Yochanan ben Dehavai said, or only some of them? That you have different Rishonim will tell you different things about. So the Gemara says, Omer Amemer, Man Malachi Ashoris Rabbonim. When Yochanan ben Dehavai said that the Malachi Ashoris told him about all of this, Malachi Ashoris must mean Chachamim rather than actual Malachi. Deitema Malachi Asharis Mamish. If you're going to say it means actual Malachi Asharis, Amai Omer Rabbi Yochanan Ein Halacha Ki Yochanan Ben Dehavai, then how can Rabbi Yochanan tell us the Chacham say the Halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan Ben Dehavai? Aren't the malachim much more familiar with how the baby is formed in the womb? So if the malachim tell us that the result of doing such and such, doing tashmish, is the baby is born with such and such, shouldn't we take the malachi asharis at their word? So obviously malachi asharis over here doesn't mean actual malachim, it means tamid chachamim, and therefore so the chachamim can say, very nice, one group of chachamim says that, we don't have to agree with them, they don't have any more insight into what and how the baby is formed in the womb than we do. So v'amai korlu malachi asharis, why are we calling them malachi asharis? Dimitzayni ke malachi asharis, because tamid chachamim are distinguished by their clothing like the malachi asharis. By their clothing, so well, by their behavior also. So the Rambam points out in Hilchos Deis that they go together. A Tamid Chacham on the outside should look like a Tamid Chacham, and of course his Deis and his Midas should be like a Tamid Chacham. So the Mefarish says over here it means in particular that he's wrapped up in tzitzis, and the Ran says generically it means they dress differently than other people, like the way the Malachi Asharis do. So therefore they're called Malachi Asharis. So now more on this topic. The Gemara says, "Hahida asori l'kamei de Rebbe." A woman came to Rebbe with a shayla. Omra loy, she says, "Rebbe, orachti lo shochan b'hafachay. I set him up the table and he turned it over." So they did mehapchen shochanan that we talked about on Amud Aleph. Whether it means that they did in a different position or whether it means that they did shaloi kadarka. So either her question could be, "Are we allowed to do that in the future?" Or her question could be, "I didn't give permission. Does he have the right to do that?" Anyway, so Rebbe answers her like the Chachamim Biti Torah Hitiratcha. After all, he says, "My daughter, the Torah was matu you in whatever position and whatever." Vani ma esalach. So, what do you want me to do for you? The fact is, I can't tell him that it's also. The Ran points out that after all, the pasuk says ki yikach ish isha. So now he's taken her as his wife. That means she's available for any such purposes. So now he brings from the Rambam uvad shalo yotzi shichvas zera lavatola. So if he's going to be doing shaloi kedarka, for example, then the Rambam would hold that ultimately he has to make sure to be motzi zera in the right place. Again, we have Tosfos elsewhere that says maybe such a thing is even only allowed once in his entire lifetime. Another example, Hahida Soy Lakame de Rav, in a later generation, a woman came to Rav with a similar shayla. Omer lo Rebbe Arachta le Shochem Ba'afachai. Omer, and Rav also says, Maishnam in Benisa, how is it any different than a fish? We said before, you bring home a fish from the fish store, you can cook it however you want, the same way, yes, your husband, you and your husband have the right to do whatever you want. So with that said, Arachta le Shochem.
Didn't she say she initiated it that way?
No, it doesn't. Well, it means, in other words, like, for example, she was in a certain position and he demanded a different position or a different, or shaloi kadavka versus kadavka, whatever. Yeah. That's why she's coming to ask. So you can understand it in two different ways. It can mean that it was against her will and she's asking, does he have the right to do that? Or it could be that it was with her consent and the question is, should we continue to do that in the future? Now, in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, there are two places in Shulchan Aruch where it brings these dinim. One in Orach Chaim, at the end of the halachas of the day, you have the halachas of going to bed and say Kriyash Mashalamita, and then you have the halachas of Tashmish. And then you also have an Evan Ezer in connection with the halachas of marriage. So in both those places, it mentions these things, that there's slight differences between them, and there are certain things that the Gemara is saying over here that in principle are mutter, but nevertheless, it says over there are osur. Doesn't mean osur as an actual osur api halacha, doesn't mean osur mitzad midas chasidus. Again, these are the kinds of things that a person discusses, that a couple discusses with their own mashpiyim and their own teachers. Yeah. The Gemara continues, the pasuk says, v'loisa suru achri levavchem, don't stray after your hearts. Omer Rebbe, so Rebbe says, this means, going back to what we said before, we said Rebbe Eliezer took tremendous steps that he shouldn't be thinking of any other woman during Tashmish, so that means, al yishta odim b'kois tebi, yitin enim b'kois acher. A man should not be drinking out of one cup, and meanwhile having in mind a different cup, which is a nice euphemistic way of saying to have relations with his wife and be thinking about a different woman. And Ravina says the chiddush of that is even if both of them are his wives. So, for example, he's having relations with Leah and thinking about Rachel is also inappropriate. There's the famous question in that case. Actually, we're going to mention now something called Bnei Tmura, where you do that, where he's having relations with one and thinks he's with the other one. And you have famous cases in Jewish history of such things. Reuven, on the face of it, was like that. The first night when Yaakov was with Leah, he thought he was with Rachel. And Reuven was conceived. You have the famous story where David HaMelech, where his father Yishai intended to have relations with his Shifcha, and in the end his wife was there. So how are they not Bnei Tzmura? So you have a huge number of different answers. In the case of Reuven, in fact, there is an explanation that is a deeper reason why his Shevet did not get territory in Eretz Yisrael proper, only in Eivra Yaud. But most of them, of course, say, come on, you're not going to say about one of the Shvatim that he's B'nai Tzmura, which we're saying over here in the Gemara is a no good thing. So rather, there's a lot of different answers. Among them is that it's not that the Magen Avraham, for example, men discusses this in Shulchan Aruch. He says it's not that what we're talking about him here in the Gemara is he's with one of them, and he's actually having in mind that I'm with the other one. But here, what it is Yaakov, as far as he knew, he had in mind whoever this is in the bed, as far as he knew it's Rachel, that he's having relations with him. He didn't know. So in effect, all it is he got the names wrong. So that's not B'nai Tzmura that we're going to talk about in the Gemara over here. That would be the B'nai Tzmura would be where he's with one and he's thinking at that time of the other one. But here that wasn't the case. And there's a lot of other different answers, including that Yaakov did whatever he could. Look, he gave Rachel simonim. He didn't know that she's gonna tell them to Leah. Another answer is Leah herself knew that she's with Yaakov and that's good enough. And there's a lot of different answers. Anyway, so the pasuk says in Yechezkel, Uvaroisi mikem hamodim v'haposhim bi. Hashem says there's going to be during the time of Golos, the ones who rebel and the ones who deliberately disobey me are going to be sifted out of the Jewish people. Over the time of Golos, the Yisurim of Golos sift out such people from the Jewish people. So who are these modem? Who are these modem and poshim bi? Amar Ablevi, Elu b'nei tesha midas. These are children who are born from any of the following nine midas, and the simon for them, b'nei osnas meshuga ches. They are, and there's different gersois and explanations on some of them, but the first one is b'nei ema, children of fear, where the husband makes his wife afraid and then they have relations. He threatens her or whatever. So that's so children born from such a thing, we're saying, are going to be these modem and potion. They're likely to grow up to be these people who are rebellious against the age there. So the point is because it could be because they have such parents, therefore it's more likely. But in terms of how the Alter Rebbe explains it in Tanya, the idea is, in other words, they're bringing down a lavush for the neshama and lavushim of nefesh, ruach, and neshama, which are no good lavushim, and therefore it's likely to have a bad effect on their development. That's B'nai Ema. B'nai Anusa, where he forces her, which is even worse. B'nai Ema would be that he threatens her, and therefore, and then they're having relations is against her rotzen. B'nai Anusa, the Ran says, is even worse, that he literally forces her to actually do the act. So the Ran explains that those both count as the same thing because they're very similar after all. So therefore,
does that mean maybe when she's a
nida is something else. Obviously, if he's forcing her when she's a nida, we're not even talking about that because that's flat out awesome. And I told her, no, we're talking about she's mutter. She's a time when she's taller, but nevertheless, he's forcing her to do it. So the Ran explains that Ema and Anusa both count as the same thing because they're in effect as one is just a worse form of the other. Therefore, even though we're going to list 10 things over here, we're counting it as only 9. There's a few other explanations. One of them is that the Maharsha points out both of them begin with an aleph, so therefore we can both count them under the same heading. The Rosh brings an explanation, not b'nei ema, but b'nei oma, which means children of an oma, of a shifcha knanis, who was free. Now, a shifcha knanis, you're allowed to marry her once she's freed, but nevertheless, she grew up in a very unsneistic atmosphere. Avodim and shfachas generally tend to be very promiscuous, so therefore she brings that mentality into the marriage as well. Anyway, b'nei anusa, b'nei snua, where he hates her, and therefore again he may be thinking about another woman. B'nei nidri, where one or the other of them is a nidri and they have relations. B'nei tzmura, where nidri is a type of cherem. B'nei tzmura, where they're mixed up, where again, like we said before, he's having relations with one of his wives and he's thinking about the other one, or. The Mefarish gives another explanation of B'nai Tzmura. He's actually thinking to be Mizana with another woman. It turns out this is his wife. So nevertheless, though, he had the intention for Znus. B'nai Meriva, where they were fighting. So even if it's not Snua, they don't hate each other, but they had an argument and they haven't made up before they have relations, and that's also no good. B'nai Shichrus, where one or the other of them is drunk and therefore he's not thinking about his wife. B'nai Grusha Salev, where he intends in his mind to... That's where then he's more likely. He's not going to be thinking about his wife. If he's thinking about anything, it's not necessarily going to be about her. It might be about who knows what. Again, the point is, he has to be Mekadosh Atzmo v'Shas Tashmish. B'nei Grusha Salev, the next one is Grusha Salev, where he has in mind, he's decided in his mind to divorce her. B'nei Ibuvia is children are mixed up. Now, there you have also a few different explanations. The Ran says it means many people had relations with her. So, like, we have no idea even who the father is. The Mefardish says over here it means the other way around. The man had relations with many women, and we don't know which one. There were a bunch of women over there. He had relations with one of them. We don't know which one. Or the other way, the other possibility, he says, again, like the Ran says, many men were with her. And a third possibility is the whole case that we talked about in Yevamos, where a woman got married within 3 months of being of her husband dying or divorcing her or whatever. And now we don't know whether the baby is from her first husband or a second. That's B'nai Yerubia. And the last one is B'nai Chatzufa, children of a woman who's Chatzuf, who's Chutzpedik, who demands Tashmish verbally. So the Gemara says on that one, Amy, is that so? There's something wrong with that. Well, Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yonason, or of Yechanan, it says on the side, Kol Adam She'ishtesh Tevaitoi, a man whose wife propositions him to have relations, Havin Loi Bonim, the result is he'll have children who are so great that Shafilu B'derdash on Moshe Rabbeinu Lohayu K'mosam. You didn't even have children of that caliber in Moshe Rabbeinu's time. Shenema, Hovu Lochem Anoshim Chachamim Nevonim. Moshe says to the people, we need Dayonim, because of Yisro's advice, bring for yourselves men who are Chachamim, who are wise, and understanding. So a couple of the next pasuk says that I took the heads of your shvatim, and it says anoshim chachamim, but it doesn't say nevoinim. The like siv nevoinim. So we see that Moshe couldn't find nevoinim, and yet uchtiv. On the other hand, yisachar chamor gorim. The pasuk says yisachar is a strong boned donkey, which also the word gorim means caused. It means a donkey caused yisachar to be conceived. The pasuk says Yaakov came home from the field that evening, and Leah came out to greet him and said, "You come to my tent." Because of the Judaism and the whole story over there, the point is what happens. So the Mefardish says that the donkey turned towards Leah's tent, and that made, and therefore Leah came out to greet him. Marsha brings from a medrash that actually the donkey brayed, the donkey made a noise as it was approaching, and Leah heard that sound and came out to greet Yaakov. And the result was that Yisachar was conceived. And the pasuk says, from Yisachar's descendants, there are people who understand Bina for the times. They were members of the Sanhedrin. So we see that she had children who have Bina, where you couldn't even find such people in Moshe Rabbeinu's times. So we see it is a good thing for her to suggest it. The answer is that she it's good when she convinces him. She doesn't actually say in so many words, "Let's do Tashmish," but rather she speaks to him. She gets him in a good mood. Here also, for example, she doesn't tell Yaakov, "Eli Tove, come have relations with me." She says, "Come into my tent." And once she's there, then she does things in order to get him in the mood. But not that she actually told him verbally, "I want Tashmish." That would be the B'nai Chatzufa that we're talking about over here, and that shouldn't be done. But Meratziatzu Artsuri, to show that she wants it and to try to do things in order to get him in the mood for that, that is a very appropriate thing. And we're saying from that you have great children. It's brought before Hashem explained. It's kind of midik and negin midah. She's looking for something that beyond what she would usually get in terms of Tashmish with her husband. And therefore, the result is that she has children who are able to go beyond. They're able to be Nevoinim and be able to understand beyond what they're taught and be able to derive new concepts from that, which is what Bina is all about. Hadron Lach Ve'ele Mutarin. Shkoyach, everyone.